My name is Chris. I am an alcoholic. It's a privilege and an honor to be here with you all this morning and be asked to share some of my experience on the fourth step. And to be in Joe Hawk Hall. This is absolutely amazing for me. I had the honor of being able to do some personal step work with Joe about 6 or 7 years ago. We clicked pretty well. He was a great, great guy and a recovery genius. He truly was. Just to tell you where the philosophy and the mechanics and the eventual experience from the steps came from. For me, I was in New Jersey and I was going to meetings. I think everybody in here has probably experienced the meetings where it's not a lot of solution. It's a lot of, you know, continuing to share about the difficulties that you're having in life or whatever. I was going to a lot of these meetings, and my issue was I was really alcoholic. And I was dying inside. I was dying inside emotionally. On a good day, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. A normal day, I would be prey to misery, depression, self-centered fear, guilt, shame, remorse, anxiety. That's a normal day. And this is during my period of sobriety. Well, I got exposed to some tapes. I've always been a collector. And what happened was I started to collect recovery tapes. And I came across a set of Joe H. and Mark H. recovery talks. Now, in 95 or so, 94, 95, Joe and Mark went around the country and did a number of big book workshops. These workshops were seminal. They were revolutionary. They were so focused on the actual mechanics and processes of the steps that it shifted my whole perspective about what recovery was about. I thought recovery was about participating in the meetings and cleaning up, and, you know, doing the coffee and you know, driving people around and going out to the diner. I just didn't know any different. And these workshops that I started to collect started to talk to me about the actual process of taking the steps. I cannot tell you how lucky you are to be here. There's something like, Patty, isn't there? There's something like 16,000 treatment centers or places that you can go for to aid your recovery from addictive illness, and that you landed in here. I can't even tell you how lucky you are. Inherent in alcoholism is usually an almost utter inability to recognize how much trouble you're in. Okay, if you're alcoholic or if you're a drug addict, you know you're in trouble. But let me tell you, you're minimizing like you have no idea. Addictive illness is an aggressive illness that doesn't usually allow you an accurate perception of how much trouble you're in. You know that your family is mad at you, you know, it's hard to keep a job, you can't hold on to your money, you're letting your health go, you know all those things. But it's an even bigger problem than that. And you know, when we look at step one, I need to go through steps one, two, and three before I can start sharing on four, just to put it in perspective. When you look at step one, we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic. And I want to be inclusive. If drugs is your problem, we need to fully concede to our innermost selves that we're a drug addict. What does that mean? I didn't know what it meant until some very, very intelligent, experienced people really explained it to me. Oh, am I powerless over alcohol? Yeah, when I drink, all hell breaks loose. Well, that's not even what they're talking about. And then for a while I thought, you know, I'm powerless over alcohol. I just can't take the first drink. If I just don't take the first drink, everything's fine. That's not what they're talking about either. They're talking about someone who suffers from an obsession of the mind, coupled with an allergy to the body, a little bit of a dash, and their lives have become unmanageable. What does that look like? I'll share from my own experience what it looks like. I know it's a good idea not to drink for me. You know, I'm a pass out, blackout, violent, insane, pathetic alcoholic. Do I know it's a bad idea to drink? Absolutely I know it. I don't need help knowing it's a bad idea to drink. I don't need people to encourage me not to drink. I already know that. The problem is the illness, alcoholism, there's a phenomenon that happens, and it's called the obsession of the mind. They describe it in the book Alcoholics Anonymous like this. Strange mental blank spots that precede the first drink or first drug. Subtle forms of insanity that precede the first drink or the first drug. What happens with me is, for some crazy reason, even knowing it's a horrible, horrible decision to make, I make that decision and I put booze back in my body. It comes almost from a place of unconsciousness. It comes almost, it's like I'm not even there making that decision. Two or three drinks into it, I'll realize, oh my God, what have I done? I'm drinking again. Okay? That's the obsession of the mind. It's the ability of one's alcoholism to blank out and blot out your ability to make sane and sound choices. That's a problem. Like, you know, if you know that the booze or the drugs are going to kill you, why can't you not use or not drink? Because of the obsession of the mind. And if you've gone down the scale far enough and this hits you, if this is your experience, you're in real, real trouble. Now, the second part of the first part of the first step is the allergy of the body. That's a craving. When I took a drink, one thing always happened every time. The first drink asks for the second drink. The second drink insists on the third demands the fourth, etc., etc. I want the tenth drink more than I wanted the ninth drink. It creates both a physical and a mental craving to continue to drink. Now, this doesn't happen with everybody. This does not happen with Aunt Fanny and Uncle Fudd. You know, they can have two glasses of wine at Thanksgiving and they're good. Okay, what happens to me is I have the two glasses of wine. I'm looking around for beer. There's no beer. I'm looking around for whiskey. There's no whiskey in the house. I gotta go. I'll see you guys later. You know, I've started the engine and the engine needs fuel. And I have little or no control over that. Now this is a problem. So many of us minimize this situation. So many of us minimize this experience that we have. Our ego wants to take responsibility of our drinking. Our ego wants to take responsibility of our recovery or our abstinence. But it's a deeper issue than that. It's when you admit to powerlessness, you admit to not being able to control putting it back in your body and not being able to control it once it is back in your body. That's what powerlessness is. So the unmanageability is sometimes the externals, you know, DUIs, I've had three of them, I lost my family, 13 jobs, you know, no friends, having to move back home with mom, you know, the whole deal. I've experienced all that, but that's not really my unmanageability. My unmanageability is the emotional state that I suffer from. My life system is a life system based on selfishness and self-centered fear. That I grew up that way. I don't know why that was, but that's the life system that alcoholism was able to live and breathe in. So there's a lot of unmanageability that happens when you suffer from an addictive illness. Personal relationship problems, okay? You're always at odds with the world. Can't seem to make a living. Misery, depression, remorse, anxiety, all of that stuff, that is alcoholism. That is drug addiction. That psycho-emotional state that you suffer from. Now, that's basically step one. You put all three of those things together, and you know, it's not good news. It's like Custer's last stand, and there's more Indians coming over the hill. You know, I'm doomed is basically what step one is talking about. But then comes step two. Step two is, well, maybe not. There's a power that you can access that can restore you to sanity and can improve your quality of life to the point where your life is no longer unmanageable. What I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous from some very, very good teachers is I need to participate in the recovery process with all I've got. I need to participate in the recovery process. I can never go up against booze single-handedly. I just can't. I can never fix all of my problems in my life myself just by deciding to. That doesn't work for me. But I came to believe that something has been working in other people's lives. You know, my sponsor was as bad as I was, and now he's got a house, he's got custody of his kids, he's got a really big job, he's got a nice car, you know, things are working in his life. So I started to believe that there's something out there that can help me. I don't really know everything I need to know about it. I want to know more about it, but I came to believe that there was a power that I could access. And what I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous is that if I rightly relate myself to God and my fellow man, if I live life along spiritual principles, I gain access to that power that can keep me from picking up a drink, that can restore some sanity when it comes to decisions with drugs and alcohol, and help recreate my life based on spiritual principles. Recovery is basically this. It's going from a life system based on selfishness and self-centered fear and shifting from that type of a life system to a life system based on love, in love and service. When you're in the life system based in love and service, you're in recovery and things are going to go well in your life. For the most part, things are going to go well in your life. You're going to have attitudes of gratitude. You're going to have spirituality. You're going to know peace. You're going to understand serenity. It's a wholesale shift in perception is basically what recovery is. And the second step is just basically asking me to believe that that's possible. Alcoholism or drug addiction is your problem. Spiritual living is going to be your solution. Step three, you know, I'm doing this very, very brief. And it's the Cliff Notes version. You know, I know where you guys are. You're going to get a much more thorough understanding of the steps that I'm going to give you here today. But step three, in its simplicity, is: am I in or am I out? All right. I understand I'm powerless over alcohol. That my life is unmanageable. That I'm starting to believe that there's a power that if I can access it, I can recover, and some things can start going good in my life. Am I in or am I out? Is step three. I need to make a decision to turn my will and my life, or my thinking and my actions, over to the care of God as I understand Him, or spiritual life. So, in step three, basically, I have to come to the conclusion that I need to buy into this process of recovery. And the buy-in is going to mean participation. So many of us want just to, you know, want the home study course, you know? Just tell me what my problem is. Just show me how not to drink. We all want these shortcuts. Unfortunately, alcoholism and drug addiction are so aggressive that the recovery process has to be aggressive. Addictive illness is an unorthodox illness. It affects your thinking. It affects your relationships. It affects your wallet. It affects your health. It affects everything about you. It's an unorthodox illness. Most illnesses, you go to the doctor and say, "Hey, doc, you know, I'm not really feeling all that great." And they'll prescribe something for you. Unfortunately, with addictive illness, it's so aggressive that it needs an aggressive recovery process. So in step three, I need a buy-in. I need to buy into this. Yes, I will do this stuff. What do you want me to do? Just tell me, and to the best of my ability, whatever that may be, I'll do it. Because I've run out of options. I've run out of plans. Here I am in one more place. You know what I mean? So step three is basically, I'm in. I need to quit playing God. I need to redefine my relationship with spirituality and with my higher power. And I need to make a decision to continue on with this recovery process and do whatever work is involved to take responsibility for that. Now in step four, well, let's look at it like this. Any problem, I like the way Bill Wilson uses the example of a business inventory. If you're running a shoe store and, you know, you're bleeding money and you're not making any money, you know, there's shoes on the shelf that aren't selling. They've been there for years. You know, there's no more room for new stuff that's going to sell. I mean, you're making a lot of bad business decisions and things aren't going well. The status of your quality of life is in the toilet. As a businessman with a shoe store, you're going to need to take inventory. You're going to need to figure out what's selling, what isn't, what works, what doesn't, what's good, what's bad. And you need to get ready to get rid of the things that aren't working, the things that are bad in your life, the things that are causing problems. You need to get rid of those. You know, to be able to move forward, you have to assess what's going on. The brilliance of the book Alcoholics Anonymous is there's still not a text more significant as far as what is addiction illness, how does it show up in your life, and what is the process of recovery for it. There's been a lot of books written out there on alcoholism. There's been a lot of books written out there on drug addiction. I still believe in my heart that nothing is more significant than the book Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's been proven time and again to work. Now, I'm alcoholic, can't manage my own life. I believe that there is a power I can access that can help me with this. I've made a decision to access that. What do I need to do? I need to take a personal inventory. I need to start seeing what is working in my life and what isn't. What is continuing to hurt me and others? What is blocking me off from a successful life? Look, I'm a smart guy. Why am I living home with mom? You know what I mean? Why do I have $2? Why have I lost my license one more time? You know, why am I working in a job, you know, that I'm so underemployed? What is going on? What, you know, why do I continue to keep getting horrible girlfriends? You know, any number of those questions. We need to start looking at all of this stuff. Now, I'm not exactly sure if you have forms here. I don't know what you do for a four-step here exactly. I know the principles in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I know you're following those because I know Mark. But let me just talk a little bit about here. Resentments. Resentment is the number one offender, it says in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Resentments kill more alcoholics than anything else. It does not say alcohol kills more alcoholics than anything else. Resentment kills more alcoholics than anything else. Because here's what happens. We get really pissed off. We get pissed off at the people who are in our room. You know, our bunkmates or whatever. You know, this place just pisses me off. I don't like the way they do this. I don't like the rules. I'm getting the hell out of here. You get the hell out of here. You're back on your own. You don't have sufficient defense against the first drink or the first drug you use again. You die. The resentment led to your death. You understand what I'm saying? There's a chain of circumstances that'll happen. Now, in resentments, we can resent people, we can resent institutions, we can resent principles. There are just things that we're angry with. Now, every once in a while I'll get somebody going through the steps who doesn't have any resentments. They're not mad at anybody. You know, that's a kind of denial. I'll ask them, well, have you ever been mad at anybody? Do you ever get pissed off at anybody at any time? Well, yeah. I go, okay, well, let's start with all those people. We can be upset at institutions. We can be upset at the government. We can be upset at the Motor Vehicle Bureau. We can be upset at the IRS. There's you know, a lot of these people are not on our Christmas card list when we get in here. You know what I mean? You write them down. We can be upset at principles. We can be a principle would be monogamy. You know, there's a lot of principles that we can be upset at. There's some principles in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that I was upset at in the 12 and 12. Like the spiritual axiom, you know, whenever there's something wrong, it's wrong with me. You know, I wasn't happy to hear that. My problems were of my own making. I didn't want to hear that. I can have a resentment toward those principles because I don't feel that they fit me. You know, my case is a little bit different. So I need to write all of these down. And how you write them down, you know, there's people in here that'll show you how to do that if you haven't already. I know a lot of you guys do multiple fifth steps and all kinds of great stuff. For a living today, what I do is I host a web broadcast where I interview a lot of people in addictive illness. A lot of the people that run the big rehabs, a lot of the clinicians, you know, believe me, I know what goes on out there in the world of addictive illness processes. And what happens in this place is probably the most significant course of action you can have to prepare you for permanent recovery. You know, so I don't want to get in the way of anybody and how they teach you how to do the mechanics of this. But I have to ask myself, why am I angry? Then I have to look at the areas in myself that are harmed, threatened, or interfered with. I can't be angry at someone or some institution or some principle without it seemingly harming, threatening, or interfering with my instincts or my ambitions. Let me tell you what I mean by that. I define instincts as the things that I have and want to keep, and my ambitions as the things out there that I want to get and acquire. Now, if something harms, threatens, or interferes with my instincts, it's going after something that I consider mine. If it harms, interferes with my ambitions, that means it's interfering with me getting something I want. You know, I'll get pissed off at a guy in a bar because it looks like he's going after the same girl I'm going after. I'll get mad at somebody at work because I think they're trying to take my job. You know, those are my ambitions. And they'll cause resentment because I have a life system based on selfishness and self-centeredness. Does that make any sense? You know, it's about me. And this is where resentments grow from, the roots of resentment. So I need to identify the areas of self. What does it affect? Does it affect my money? Does it affect my personal relationships? Does it or will it affect my sexual relationship? I need to look at, there's about seven areas of self that I need to look at for every single resentment. Then there's a line of demarcation. It says, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done to us, we resolutely look at our own faults. Where had we been at fault? Where were we selfish? Where were we dishonest? Where were we self-seeking? Where were we frightened? Remember, selfish is, this is mine, you can't have it. Self-seeking is, I want that, get out of my way. Dishonesty, we all know what that is. Fear, we all know what that is too. I need to look at this stuff. I need to be dead on honest as I can be at any given moment with the fourth column or the area where I've been at fault. Get all of this down on paper. There's a magic that happens between the pen and the paper that will not happen between the mind and the mouth. So it's very, very important to learn the discipline of actually writing this stuff down. There's just a magic that happens between the pen and the paper. So I start looking at this. You know, I start to put together the whole Megillah, the whole series of mistakes and resentments and all this stuff. I start putting it down on paper. I get as many of these things down as I can. With whom I was angry. The next part of the fourth step is to look at our fears. Now, a lot of us we're courageous people. We storm into a bar, we pick on the biggest guy, we race motorcycles, you know, we ride with the Harley guys. You know, to talk to us about fear sometimes is tricky because we're courageous. We're sometimes insane, you know. I got to tell you, I was an absolute nut out there. You put some booze in my body and I wasn't afraid of anything. That's really not the type of fear that I like to look at in the inventory. I like to look at the self-centered fear. Self-centered fear was the way I perceived myself. I had a general anxiety about it. I just never felt comfortable with myself or my environment. I just didn't. If they said, Chris, there's a party tonight at 8 o'clock, let's go. I'd start drinking at 6 o'clock, so I'd have my fortitude. I'd be able to step out at 8 o'clock. Well, what's the problem with me going to the party and starting to drink? Because the alcohol and the drugs gave me a little bit of courage. It took away a little bit of that anxiety, that feeling not a part of, feeling separate from. The alcoholic and the addict, we suffer from feeling separation. So we're separate from everything. So I have to start listing my fears. What are some of my fears and why do I have them? And I really need to look at them. Then there's the fear prayer. It asks us, don't we have this fear because self-reliance has failed us? Our life system built on selfishness and self-centeredness has failed us. Otherwise, we wouldn't have these fears and anxieties. We wouldn't have to put alcohol and drugs in our body to feel okay. Sobriety would be enough for us. So I need to start looking at these fears. I need to list them all out. Okay. The third part of the fourth step is harms to others. Certainly, the emphasis needs to be on sex. I know of no other group of people who do a worse job with relationships than alcoholics and drug addicts. We take hostages, we use sex as a weapon, we'll withhold sex to get what we want. We'll bribe, cajole, we'll rape, pillage, we'll do whatever we can to get what we think we need. We'll go after women like they're a drug. We'll pick one that is attractive to the point where we know they're going to make us feel different. I'm going to go after her because that would be unbelievable. So we're like going after women like they're drugs for us. It's like going after a fix. Once we get into a relationship, we start acting incredibly selfishly. It's like we own that person. We're involved in every detail. What are you doing? Where are you going? Who are you talking to? Who's that on the phone? I mean, we're insane, where it comes to relationships. So we need to really start looking at our behavior with the relationships we've had. There's a review of each relationship. I ask my guys to write at least a paragraph, just, painting the picture of the relationship. Okay, then there's 9 questions. Some of the questions are, where did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Who have we hurt? We also need to look at the collateral damage in our relationships. That can be great. We don't ever want to miss that. In other words, when I was going after these women and I was engaging them in my life, and they ran for the hills after being burned 3 or 4 times. Who else has been hurt? The parents, their children, their boyfriend or husband. I mean, who knows? Who knows all these other people that could have been harmed? My wife could have been. I could list all kinds of stuff. So that needs to be listed, and that needs to be looked at. Then at the end, it says, with this information, because now we're looking at, look at all this stuff. We can see what hasn't worked for us. This is the stuff that contributed to our failure at having a successful relationship. It says we then develop a sex ideal. We then try to develop a sex ideal. I'll usually tell my guys, look, go into some prayer, go into some meditation, ask God, you already know what doesn't work. You listed it all out. Ask God for some of the attributes of the type of person you need to be. Who do you want to show up as at the next party? You know what I mean? This is really, really important. You attract what you are. If you're a dysfunctional, maniacal alcoholic, who do you think you're going to be attracting in relationships? You attract what you are. So I would rather start attracting people that have some kind of qualities. So I need to start developing certain qualities in my life and how I show up and how I react in relationships. So the sex ideal, I asked my guys to put at least a couple of paragraphs together, usually more, listing out the attributes and the behavior patterns and the type of person you need to be or you want to be in the next relationship. And then it says we ask God to mold our ideals and help us to be the type of people we would like to be. So after we've figured out how we want to show up, every single day we need to ask God for the strength and the direction to become that person. And that becomes a spiritual discipline, and that becomes a cornerstone on some significant change in your life, being a better person. You know, I don't know any of you real well. Some of you are probably married, some of you have girlfriends, some of you have families, some of you are estranged from families. But I know alcoholics, and I know each and every one of you wants to be the best person they can be with the people that you care about. You just haven't been able to over the last number of years because you've been shooting yourself in the foot. This process helps us to stop shooting ourselves in the foot. So we start asking God to mold our ideals, and that's what we do. Now, this is an unorthodox treatment or recovery process for an illness. You know, if you've got heart disease or something, you don't go home and inventory all this stuff. It probably would be a good idea, but that's not what the doctor's going to order you to do. Because alcoholism is so aggressive and so unorthodox, it takes an unorthodox recovery process. Going back to the origins of where did they figure all this stuff out? Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob were both suffering incredibly from alcoholism. Both of them were exposed to the Oxford Group. The Oxford Group was where Alcoholics Anonymous came from. The Oxford Group was basically a group of people that got together to talk about religious and spiritual principles and actually put them together in their life. And they did it with an intensity. They met almost every night. They had weekend house parties. They got together and they were really active and they really got busy talking about how to become spiritual people, how to become, how to have more faith, how to live better lives. Now, Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and their wives basically learned everything they needed to know for alcoholism recovery through the Oxford Group principles. Bill was going a couple of years. Dr. Bob was going about 4 years. Bill was able to stay sober. Dr. Bob wasn't. The significant fact in this was here's how Bill showed up to his recovery process. He went every single night. He was grabbing people to bring them along. He was sharing his experience with other people. He was constantly trying to help people. Every time he was asked to do something, he did it. He got up in front of people. He told his story. He was about the business of the Oxford Group or spiritual living. He was about the business, and he stayed sober. Dr. Bob, on the other hand, wanted to just go, come late, sit in the back, don't contribute anything, and leave when he's done. Many of us have approached 12-step recovery groups that way. We'll show up, we'll go to a bunch of meetings, but we really aren't going to get active, we really aren't going to get busy. The difference between the two was Dr. Bob was busy and stayed sober. I'm sorry, Bill Wilson was busy and stayed sober. Dr. Bob was minimizing and dodging and weaving and procrastinating, and he did not stay sober. Bill gets together with him and says, look, we need to get busy. Dr. Bob had one more relapse and he stayed sober after that. And for 15 years, he helped thousands of alcoholics and didn't take another drink. Now, it's important to see where these principles came from. They came from Christian groups that got together to practice spiritual principles. I said earlier, alcoholism or drug addiction is your problem. Spiritual living is your solution. And that's absolutely, absolutely true.